And welcome to the Vandal Factory podcast. My name's Natalie Quatermass.
I'm Henry Raby.
And together we are Vandal Factory. On the Vandal Factory podcast, we like to talk about hope and anger as being two fuels that get our activists and our artists up in the morning, that keep them going through the tough times. And oh boy, have we got some tough times that we've been going through. Henry Raby, how is your hope? How is your anger?
Well, I'm actually feeling quite hopeful.
Wow.
Not going to lie, NGL. Wow.
Springtime helps with that, right?
Yeah. It also helps that I went to Devoted and Disgruntled, which is a big open space event run by Improbable Theatre Company. It's an annual event. It's been going 19 years.
Wow.
And in this open space event, you bring, you say a session, you sort of provocation, a question, you're looking for help. So it could be people talked about, how do we support freelancers in the arts, or how do we deal with bullying in the arts? Or I just did a provocation that was, should we just make some zines? And we just sat and made some zines for the session. So it was loads of just like really sound people that all like got it, that are, as the name suggests, devoted, but also pretty disgruntled.
Yeah.
But obviously, don't worry, I plugged the podcast to lots of people. So hello to any new listeners out there. But I'm also feeling very hopeful because there's been quite a wave of activism lately, Natalie. Lots of things have been going down around the world. Do you want to hear about some of the activisms?
Yeah, go ahead.
So there is a festival, right, in Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And by all accounts, quite a cool, trendy festival, right? It's called South by Southwest Festival.
Oh, yeah.
Now, it turns out this festival was being sponsored by the US military and various defense contractors, which have been selling arms to Israel and other regimes around the world. And obviously, the US military used drone strikes and are part of this huge military complex, creating a forever war, which...
See previous podcast for discussion with... Leeds artist Fold about the forever war.
So a load of artists were like, we are not going to be passive entertainers. We cannot cross this line and perform at this festival. You can't profit from our noise. Mm-hmm. And actually, in doing that, we are complicit. We are taking that money and we are normalising this. So at least over 80 artists have boycotted, pulled out South by Southwest Festival. People have lost a lot of money over it, but ultimately, and you know, some people, this is like a career high to get to perform at this huge festival. It's 300,000 people attend it, but that is the line that in these days, like when the such violence is happening in Gaza under military bombs and drones and snipers, like we cannot be complicit in that, and we have to make a stand as artists. So thank you to all who pulled out. Every single Irish artist pulled out that was going to perform. The UK's Lambrini Girls have pulled out, as well as other writers and speakers. And for me, that's like punk, if you want to distill it down, because I'm a big old punk rocker, as anybody.
Well, you're a little punk rocker, aren't you? You're a little nerdy punk rocker.
Is about going, how can we build something different? That's what DIY politics and ethos is. And to go, actually, we won't normalise this is really important.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's important to point out that, like, it's not always an easy choice. People are making very difficult decisions because they know it's the right thing to do. And all hail to their ships, all wind to their sails.
All fuel to their rockets.
Yeah, very good, very good. That kind of rocket, not the other kind of rocket that's
nice
landing
rocket.
On Gaza.
Sure. There's also been something that's made me very hopeful. Closer to home, well, not quite home because we live in Leeds, but in that London, there's been a huge, amazing guerrilla festival organised by Culture Workers Against Genocide. So on the Saturday, the 16th of March, 2024, they occupied and took over the Barbican in London. So the Barbican have been complicit in censorship of Palestinian artists and speakers, and they filled this space with banners and sounds and PA systems and
children
colour.
And babies.
Yeah,
I like that bit.
It was like decorating with solidarity, right? And they had extracts from Ashtar Theatre's Gaza monologues. They read poetry by Rafit Alaria and Hiba Abu Nada, who were killed last year by Israel's siege. They had statements from writers who's experienced censorship. They had a glorious dabka, which is Palestinian dance. And then afterwards, the kids coloured in these beautiful kites and filled up them with messages of solidarity and resistance. So we're going to hear some of the audio now from Culture Workers Against Genocide.
One, we are the artists. Two, we won't be silenced. Three, stop the censorship now, 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 now.
Hello, Barbican. Here today to reclaim this space for Palestinian art and culture. The Barbican have been complicit in censoring and silencing the voices of Palestinians and pro-Palestinian allies.
Organisers of a talk about Gaza had to find a new venue at short notice after cancellation by the Barbican.
Shame!
A Palestinian radio producer was warned not to mention Palestine.
Shame!
This censorship aids the attempted erasure of Palestinian culture now occurring alongside the genocide committed by the Israeli army.
Arts institutions which boast of anti-racism want to remain neutral. Neutrality has become the acceptable mask of liberal racism, and our arts institutions are falling for that. It is not controversial to stand up in the face of a genocide. Thank you.
That was part of a mini film that's been produced by Real News. Please go check them out on YouTube, and also please check out Culture Workers Against Genocide to read up on their demands for the Barbican, as well as all the things they do in standing in solidarity with Palestine.
So next week, we're going to see a play by one of our favourite theatre companies here in Leeds, Red Ladder, directed by Elvie Piper. This play is called We're Not Going Back, and it's on tour at this very moment, written by Boff Wally. It's first debuted over 10 years ago, and it's a musical about working class women and the miners' strike. I mean, what more could you possibly want from an amazing play out and a night out?
75 mines, 3 sisters, 1 cause, and a 6-pack of baby sham.
And Henry had a good old chat to Elvie and Chris from Red Ladder.
Yeah, throughout this interview, you'll hear songs from the show, and they're featuring the actors Victoria Brazier, Claire Marie Seddon, and Stacey Sampson, plus musician Becky Owen.
Hi, I'm Elvie Piper. I'm a theatre director based here in wonderful Leeds, and delighted to be here to talk about We're Not Going Back, a revisited production for Red Ladder.
Hi, my name is Chris Lloyd. I'm the exec producer for Red Ladder Theatre Company. I have been with the company for 3 months shy of 18 years. And when we were asked whether we would consider restaging performance, it was joyous, because this is one of my favourite Red Ladder shows in that 18-year period. So yeah, it's great.
So We're Not Going Back is the story of three sisters in Sheffield, or just outside of Sheffield, in the miners' strike, basically fighting to keep the pits open, basically taking a different standpoint. Each of them are changed by the experience of going through this over this prolonged period of time. So we get to know these three sisters as individuals, and we see the impact that striking and being part of that strike has on each of them, but also where they are at the end of it. And for something that might be thought of as having a sort of very historical, specifically historical moment attached to it, which, you know, is the Thatcher strikes, like, actually it feels scarily relevant today with striking workers and the cost of living crisis, and just thinking about the impact on people's lives that the government has, and how people get forgotten and happily swept to one side when they aren't the priority. So it's something that is a beautiful sort of snapshot of the experience of women at this moment. And then it's also something that feels eerily relevant today, that I think there's lots to be sort of drawn from and reflected on right now. So I'm really thrilled to be reimagining this show. There are lots of people that worked on this production originally who have come back. So I feel like I'm the newbie in this mix. We've got the whole original cast from 10 years ago returning, which is really exciting. But my approach was to treat this not as a remounted version of a production that has already existed, but to think of it as a production right now and how we would approach it. Because theatre changes so quickly, and it's responsive, and it's a reflection of the world as it is. So to do things as we did them 10 years ago feels like completely in the opposite vein of what this production is about, which is about activism and protest and people being heard and understood. And so it feels like we have to make that feel relevant for now. I'm a different director. It was the brilliant Rod Dixon who directed it originally. And every director comes at things slightly differently. So it would be silly for me to sort of try and emulate someone else's process, I always think. So for me, the backbone of this show is the music. It is incredible. It has got these beautiful songs all the way through, all sung live. And I think if we crack that nut as this amazing spine of the show, then all the narrative scenes sort of hang off these songs for me.
To the lads on strike.
To cast and women
against pit closures. Sing out the old. Ring in the new. Tell me of the miners, bold and true.
Sing out the
sing
old.
Out the
sing
old.
Out the
ring
new.
In the new.
Ring in
tell
the new.
Tell me of the miners,
bold and
true. Sing out the
old. Sing out the
ring
old.
The
ring
out the
ring
new.
In the new.
Ring in the new.
Tell me of the miners,
the miners, bold and true.
So we'll very much be starting with the music. It's also the thing that takes a lot of time to bed into our heads and our bodies as performers and creatives. So giving that the time and space it needs. And then I've got the beautiful gift of having so many of the creatives who have worked on it previously back in the room. So probably on this occasion, we won't need to spend as much time delving into the backstories and histories of this piece, because actually there's a wealth of knowledge in the room already, which is such a treat for me. In that time, in 10 years, you know, audiences' experiences of live art have changed. So I'm always aware that it's rare these days I'll go and see a show that has two halves and an interval, and this show does. So thinking about the pacing and the attention of our audiences, of the Netflix generation, as everyone calls us, and how we keep it exciting and paced in a way that is suitable for current audiences. But also it's a show that's going from the City Varieties Theatre in Leeds to working men's clubs and miners' institutes. So it's really important that there's a flexibility in how we stage it. So that's something that I find I do more and more of as a director. And I kind of love it as a challenge that you have to put on the same quality work no matter where it is. And it has to belong in all those spaces. So I think that's the difference this time round, is it's got to be something that can pop up in lots of different spaces and feel like it belongs in all of them.
If you should go down to Sheffield City Hall, you'll be coming back red. Oh, not coming back at all.
Red City, it's a separate estate. Everybody gets cheaper buses on the rates, and all the old rules, they're up for debate in Red City. Red City, where the red flag flies, where they cut Tory policies down to size, and every other citizen's a Soviet spy in Red City.
Unfortunately, it's still prescient today, as Elvie said, but we were in rehearsal for this show 10 years ago, and we got the news from the Arts Council that we'd been cut, our funding, core funding had been cut. And it was kind of ironic, we were making a play about a community whose livelihood had been cut, more or less. And on that very day, our press and PR officer, who's freelance, and our graphic designer, who's not in on our payroll, set up a funding campaign for the company. And we opened the piece at the Durham Miners Gala in Durham, strangely enough, in a building where, during the strike, women weren't allowed in the building, which Boff's always got a really good, I mean, not that he knew he was going to open there necessarily, but that was a really lovely kind of twist almost, or almost like a kind of Saks boot to the NUM as well, that even though it was acknowledged at the time that the women supporting the strike were incredibly powerful and important, they still were bastions of male society. They just weren't allowed to. They were allowed to be on the picket line while the men went in for meetings, but they weren't actually legally allowed to be on the picket line by the NUM. So there was some, I mean, having the three characters as women was really powerful, I think. And also, as Elvie said, the journey the three sisters go through. So we start on Sister One's birthday, her 18th birthday. That's the youngest sister, and it finishes on her 19th birthday. And the arcs that the three characters go through, and I think Olive's is really profound. She's the kind of, as Elvie says, the stoic, more kind of traditional. She believes in society. She believes in institutions like the law, like the police, like, you know, the BBC. And there's a realization in her journey that not everything you read in the press is true. Not everything you hear on the radio is true. Not everything the police do is straight down the line. And she has a, you know, a huge eureka kind of journey that she starts questioning lots of things, you know. And I think, you know, that it's very simple storytelling, but massively effective. And the songs, as I said, are astonishingly powerful, short but powerful. And the fact that the company, the girls have all stayed together, stayed as huge friends over the 10 years. And I don't think I've had a more pleasant job than emailing everyone saying, well, do you fancy getting the band back together? You know, it was just like, yes, yes, yes. It was so good. There was no reticence about it. It won't be as good as last time. It will be even better than last time, I'm absolutely sure. So there's lots of reasons why it's one of my favourite. You know, 40 years, you would have thought that some of the anger and the tension and the rift that were born out of this would have healed, but still very, very powerful and very unnerving. And, you know, there are still communities that we've toured to that are, you know, haven't made their way back, really.
We've got to tell a brilliant story. That's definitely our job. But ultimately, we're telling it to someone. So it needs to speak to and reflect the interests and ideas of the people watching it, or challenge them as well. Like, that's our job as storytellers, to provide a view of something and hopefully incite excitement, good or bad. And I think absolutely. So I'm... hands up, I'm not from Yorkshire, but I did grow up in South Wales, which in Cardiff. So like the impact of the closing of the mines and the miners' strike was just as prevalent where I grew up. So I can really relate to the historic importance of it. But similarly, it's not something we teach in schools. So you have to, we're kind of, this is how we learn about it. We learn about it through art. We learn about it through the stories of the people who lived through it, which is in recent and living memory, and through the music and through the news stories of that time, some of which were like incredibly skewed towards the political leanings of the government at that moment. So it's a fascinating point in history. It's so important to where we are right now here in Yorkshire, and beyond. And it's something that will continue to have an impact and on where we live for such a long time. We spend a year with these characters, and we see their world shift wildly, not only because of what is happening politically and around them, but their own individual experiences of the strike and of the closure, and where they all sort of end up at the end is different. You know, we are all changed by the experiences we go through. We've got Olive, Mary and Isabel, who are our three sisters, and there is that sort of Chekhovian idea that they all come from this like specific, very almost you know, stereotypical standpoint, we've got Isabel, the young, rebellious teenager, just on the cusp of adulthood. We've got Mary, who's a little bit more of a rebel. And then we've got Olive, who's quite stoic and old school. And actually, the joy is watching their kind of the streams of their lives cross and intersect as they find out different things about themselves, as they grow, as they learn. There's so much to learn about what happened then through their experiences. And we have a fourth character on stage, who is our musical arranger, Becky Owen, who plays the music live and also is part of the action, almost the every woman, the person, all those other characters that we don't get a chance to fully delve into, but we acknowledge that there's this huge wealth of female experience happening in and around these three characters as well. So I think it's, if you don't know anything about the historical context of this story, there's loads to find and learn in it. I know I have. But also, it's a really just joyful piece of storytelling about three characters, if that's what you're looking for too, filled with absolutely incredible music by Both. So what's not to love?
Because Unite have been so amazing at supporting this second time around as well as the first time, I mean, they deserve a big shout out for this. But there's two set pieces. So we're doing some touring in March, which we open on International Women's Day, which is great. And I think me and Tom, who's our technician, will perhaps be the only blokes allowed in the space, which will be quite, we'll have to hide at the back. But then there's also, we'll be taking the show back to the Durham Miners Gala 10 years on, and those dates are in July. So there's plenty of time, plenty of places to catch it. So, you know, I hope listeners will look us up.
Well, fair play to him. Absolutely. Normal service will not be resuming. Just when we thought we knew the rules that ran the game, we found a world of change where nothing, nothing stays the same.
Oh, nothing stays the same.
We stepped outside the lines they told us not to cross. Instead of keeping quiet, we all sang bollocks to the boss.
Bollocks to the.
And what we knew by heart, it all got rearranged. What was neat and normal ends up backwards, round and upside down and strange. Everything's changed. Everything's changed. Eddie's in the kitchen, cooking something new. Eddie's not for doing all the things that Eddie used to do. The cordon bleu, everything's changed. Bouillabaisse stew, everything's changed. Chocolate fondue, everything's changed. Everything's changed. Everything's changed.
If that hasn't enticed you to go and see We're Not Going Back by Red Ladders anywhere on tour around Leeds at the moment, I don't know what will convince you if that hasn't. Oh, that's made me feel all warm, and I'm going next Friday, so I'm excited.
Well, speaking of hope and solidarity
and not going back
and female spaces, Natalie, you felt quite renewed lately. It's been International Women's Day. What have you been up to?
The chat train is pulling into Nat's provocation station.
I had such a good sort of accidental, well, lots of it was accidental. I'm not going to say International Women's Day because it sort of went on for about 4 days. I could have been in about 10 different places at any given time, the amount of events that were kind of crammed into that one time, and we definitely need to spread it out. But I just... out of all of the different ways in which female camaraderie and women influence and make my life so nourished and better, they were all done in these like 4-day period. So I was going through quite a tricky time, but it wasn't something that I wanted to share with people yet. So I was walking around feeling like an open wound, more so than usual. But nobody knew that that's how I felt. And so I was masking quite a lot. And yet I felt so incredibly nourished. So the first thing that happened was our very dear friend, Emily Moxon, who is a yoga teacher to nurseries, babies and primary school kids. And
she's a mental health emergency first aider.
And a crocheter. We went to see Grace Petrie at, where was it?
The Brudenell Social Club.
So it's my first ever gig at the Brudenell. And Grace Petrie, one of my all-time favourite performers, two amazing warm-up acts, and just being in a space that was queer and just felt like the way the Brudenell is set up, that you're kind of in this semicircle with the crowd and you're, you know, below the artists. So when it's call and response and you know, shanties and folk songs and stuff to all join in with, like Grace Petrie, it felt like we were standing in a choir. And that, and I definitely wanted, when I found out you couldn't go, I was like, who do I go with who's going to enjoy it as much as I do? And Emily Moxon was that person. Just to dance and cry and then laugh and sing and feel powerful and, yeah, moved as always by Grace Petrie being on fire and with a big band this time as well. She was on with like six other performers. So making like quite a different sound to other ones that previous tours she's done. And then the next day I was up at Chapel FM where we are right now, and there was a Connecting Women's event. And so that was lots of different third sector organisations coming together, doing like crafts and a radio show and like a hand massage and just a very gentle, mindful space of people who live within, you know, spitting distance of my house. So I knew a lot of people there, but it was quite quiet and chilled and I didn't feel like I had to be on, and I could just go and be around women who I love and admire and had an awesome chat on the radio and played Grace Petrie because I'm a one-note kind of gal.
So you can probably find Nat's chat on East Leeds Community Radio on Chapel FM's website.
Indeed. And yeah, that was just a really beautiful, nourishing space. Then we had protest time.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. So then we're going into like demo space where there was lots of women out on the Palestinian Solidarity March. It was run by women, which I thought was brilliant, and had an all-female lineup and
speakers before and after. Yeah.
Yeah. And lots of not the women taking up the megaphones, it was men stepping back, which is like so often the case of like, it's not actually the women that have stepped forward. They've always been there. It's when the men like step aside and go, oh yeah, cool, I don't need to claim this space right now. So lots of women passing around the megaphones. And I think it just so happened that we were quite close to someone who was doing an awesome job on the drums and giving us a solid, my amazing drumming skills.
If somebody could just, because somebody could just loop that,
yeah,
and we'll just play that on repeat.
Beatboxers, I think you found your new champion, Nat's here. So it just meant that our chants were like a bit more harmonic and had a bit more rhythm to it. And we just got really, I mean, we were always into it, right? But this was like next level. And we were sort of surrounded by this pocket of younger people, weren't we? Who were just also up for kind of doing slightly different chants and like me and Henry get very fed up with the 1, 2, 3, 4
occupation. No,
the dirge. No, I can't be doing with it. I want to mix it up. I want to like vary your voice, vary your volume, give it some
bit of sing song.
Yeah, come on. Let's. We're here to sell a message. So that was great fun, and then also. Yeah, then people just come up to you and like we're shaking our hands and being like, thanks for your voice today. Thank you. And you're like, so I think we approach it like we're approaching, I don't know, like some people, if you're a football goer
yeah.
and you see like a big, like a huge match and it's really exciting and you just got this like big pack of people just like pumped up with energy. Yeah. That's how I try and approach the march, to just bring your body, bring your voice, and it's also what you need for like, I need to get that rage out. So I also need to feel physically exhausted at the end of it in order to like to stay sane, because the rest of the week you're just sitting there watching this horror happen and feeling very disconnected from other people. So that's your time to like get it out your body, you know?
Suggestion.
Yeah.
You lead some diaphragm workshops.
Yeah, I think about it all the time, actually. It always, or just, you know, standing up at the front and being like, hey, this is, we're all going to put our hands on our bellies and imagine you've got a balloon. Mm. We're going to fill up your belly, fill up that balloon. This is called a diaphragm.
You want to facilitate.
I do want to facilitate, but, you know, not everyone would be down with that. Yeah. But anyway, so that was cool. And then we went straight to a wonderful event mm-hmm. that was called SOS Gaza Women. And this was organised by West Yorkshire Healthcare Workers for Palestine, a wonderful group yeah. of women who have been marching all over West Yorkshire, surprisingly. And they really focus on, unsurprisingly, like the medical need in Palestine, about what's happening to doctors and nurses and healthcare workers and also the infrastructure and hospitals. There are no more hospitals. And we've been chanting for months and months, stop bombing hospitals.
Stop bombing hospitals.
And quite rightly, one of the nurses stood up and made a speech a month or so ago and said, we've been chanting this, but there are no more hospitals. They've bombed them all. Mm. They then like slowly have rebuilt certain ones to try and get them like up and running in a ramshackle fashion. And then they've gone in again and just kidnapped a whole load of more innocent people from those places. So it's a dire situation. And so quite rightly you expect, I was anticipating this evening to be a very serious one, and it was one that I thought was important. It was fundraising for an organisation called MECA, MECA, so that's Middle Eastern Children Association, I want to say, and a couple more organisations, and had stalls and two very prestigious speakers who were Palestinian medical workers. And the founder of MECA, the organisation, spoke. And, yeah, as I was saying, I was anticipating these to be important, serious evening. I'm not anticipating them to be a joy and a delight. And they are. It was. And that's partly because of the good humour and the strength of solidarity that comes from working with such amazing people, and the generosity, and what happens when you are put to work, you know, whether that work is like, you know, everyone needs a purpose, don't they? So when you're busy and you've got this action, then come with it is a good feeling. And we're like, we're not alone, we're standing together. So the main speaker, Dr. Mona Alfara, was so wise and warm. And she's from Gaza. She was there at the very beginning of this particular wave of violence in October, and then has come over to Britain. Over 100 of her relatives have been killed, and yet she is telling stories with good humour and wisdom and urgency.
If you looked up the word gusto in the dictionary, there'd be a picture of Dr. Mona. Like, what a figure of strength.
Yeah, and female strength as well. I'm struggling to find words, but you know what? There was something, there's so much that she said that just rang, it's still ringing round in my head, and I think, God, if I can have the humanity that you've got in your little finger, then I'm doing all right. But she said, she was talking about how Palestinians will never be broken. She said how resilient, how strong, and how we'll go back and we'll rebuild our country. Of course we'll just go again. We did it in the first intifada, we did it in the second, and we'll do it this time. Like, yep, we're going to have to, it's going to be really hard. It's going to take generations. And then she said, but we will free them from their oppression, referring to the Israeli and Zionism and this extreme Zionism that hates Palestinians and sees Palestinians as subhuman. And that's coming from a woman who has had over 100 relatives killed, who has seen atrocities that I can't even imagine. And she's thinking about feeling sorry for the young men and women who are in the IDF and whose minds have been poisoned and brainwashed into seeing this atrocity as a victory and as a positive thing. She pities them and says, we will liberate them from their hatred. That level of humanity? My Lord. My Lord. How do we get her running the world? Goodness me. Can you imagine a world leader saying that? A prime minister, a president?
Well, Build Something Better was the name of Grace's new album.
Yeah.
And I think that's a nice segue to play a track. And that's Banger of the Hour.
Because every single song you own is a banger.
It's time for Nat's Banger of the Hour.
Bangers?
Is it a banger?
Okay, folks, so for this, I would like you to imagine that you're in a sticky gig space, that in the corner of the room is a small stage about a meter off the ground. So you're looking up at Grace Petrie and her band. You are standing in what feels like a yob, a choir. What's something between a choir and a yob?
You mean a mob?
A mob, yeah, that's it. You're in a mob of queers and you're all about to sing your hearts out. This is The House Always Wins.
The first thing they teach you eating is to recognize a mark. They don't come no easier than desperate in the dark. A little smoke and mirrors, boys, you've got them on the hook. Blaming other folks for what you took. The biggest con men came and we were looking down a hill. A land of milk and honey, boys, an oven ready deal.
Absolutely gutted with a capital G that I missed Grace Petrie with a capital G's set. And you might be wondering, Henry, why didn't you go along and sing your little heart out at this gig? That's because I was invited to perform another gig. And so it is time for Henry Does His Own Thing.
Wait, Henry, you said something interesting before. For the first time ever.
Whoa!
Oh, my goodness.
He's doing his own thing!
So I was asked to come and perform at a fundraiser for Medical Aid for Palestine in York, my hometown, at the Crescent, which is an absolutely proper banging venue. I did some poetry alongside Izzy Britton and Minal Sukumar, and I did this brand new poem, which I've never performed before. It's still being worked with and toyed with and played with and experimented with. I don't think it even has a name, but I'm just going to play the audio from that gig, and I hope you enjoy.
Amal finishes writing Free Gaza on the window condensation in uppercase. Hops off the bus at the station, tense like tortured lightning, questing for her first ever demonstration. This is uppercase exciting. She thinks about her upcoming detention for decorating the canteen with Palestine stickers and how when she was confronted by Mr. Robbins, head of year, she rallied against the stifling of political voices within the school's walls like there was something burning inside her. And when Mr. Robbins, head of year, told her that this activism was nothing less than a childish whine, she flashed the V sign. Victory. Amal can feel the thumping chants before she rounds the corner, skips a little bit faster so she doesn't miss a rhyme. And everyone is here, from the road to Queen's Hotel, from the... I have to say, like, I'm originally from York, but now I live in Leeds. So this poem... What I'll do is, even though this poem references Leeds Art Gallery in Millennium Square, I'll change the words to be York-related, so you don't feel left out, right? And everyone is here from the Museum Gardens to St. Helens Square. Ah, oh, that's relatable. I've been there. Ripping off the paths like something's gonna tear. The streets stretch at the seams, overflowing reds and white dance with the blacks and greens. Heart and demo swell, and they all chant for a ceasefire, for peace and justice. Muslims, Jews, Christians, and those with faith in just us. And the onlookers clapping, clapping, clapping. Now, fair play. This march can be scary, 'cause there's face paint and blow up watermelons. and little kefir scarfs on little licky dogs. And someone hands Amal a megaphone, and then it really kicks off. The extremism on display is a teenager with something urgent to say. If you want to shout above the bombs and sniper shots and drones, you hand a young person a megaphone. And she imagines everyone is here. The displaced bathed in sunlight from their cells. The families united at last across borders. The sea of keys clenched into fists. The children giggling. And the theatre at the circus. Between chants is the pluck of an oud, the prayer of thanks, the clump of a horse, the taste of olives, the fine texture of a dress, the pressure of gauze. And the jeering from blunt blokes is drowned out by applause. They parade past the lineup of red-handed rich who reap what they sowed, the arms dealers dripping in blood down the headrow. All right, let's change that to Lord Mayor's Walk. CEOs who made a killing from settlements hold their heads low. Next to politicians wibbling without spines and the trolls and the media and bot farms who lied. And the military who repent their choices haunted by white flags and pleading voices. And Amal marches, briefly thinks about Monday morning and hope is grown to blaze like a flicker and she's already planning where to place the next wave of Palestinian stickers. Thank you.
Natalie, I think it's time for a brand new feature.
Yeah, we don't have a jingle yet for this feature, do we? But I'm just gonna vibe it, guys. So most of you, if you've listened before, you'll know that I'm a freelance artist, and Henry's done his fair chunky share of freelance time.
I've been in the old freelance mines.
Yeah, and I think a little bit like you mentioned at the beginning with devoted and disgruntled, it can feel like that when you're a freelancer. There are tricky times. We're out there. We're already living in a society that's trying to isolate us as much as possible, just as human beings. And then if you're a freelancer, I think that is accentuated. I think if you're disabled or chronically ill, I think that's accentuated. I think if you're a woman or queer or a person of the global majority, that's also accentuated. So anyway, I thought it might be a good idea if we do a shout out to all the freelancers and just start having a chat about what your freelance experience is. I think there's some proper poor practice going on in the arts and the way that the arts industry treats freelancers, and it's worth us doing our bit to talk about it. And maybe at the very least, some freelancers who are listening might feel that they're not alone. At very most, we start the revolution, we collect all the audio, we put it to the Arts Council, and we all got a pay raise. Hey. Obviously, everyone also, PS, join a union. Oh, I was about to improv a jingle, wasn't I? The Freelance Feeling Factory. Come on in to Freelance Feeling Factory. Come on in, open the door. Come on in to the Freelance Feeling Factory. Do, 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 do. How's that?
So just to be clear, the name of the feature is The Freelance Feelings Factory.
Yeah.
Great. Here's Amta talking about her experiences as a freelancer.
Hey!
Hi, I'm Amta Tul Wahid and I'm a freelance producer and artist. The best part is the freedom that you get, the freedom to negotiate your pay and the freedom to take part in different projects and you're not tied down to one thing. What I like about freelance is how many people you get to meet. Since I've been freelance, my connections and my networks has just opened dramatically, and that's given me the options and the freedom to collaborate and to work on different projects at the same time. The main issues that I face in the art sector is how little funding there is to be able to be paid properly. And an arts union living wage, the daily rate for a facilitator or a workshop lead is up to £250 to £300. That isn't possible, so there is sometimes, you have to kind of just give, because you want to be flexible and you want to work with people. So to be able to work on certain projects, you just have to kind of give. I always advocate for living wages for freelance people. And I guess as well, a lot of organisations or third sector organisations that don't work within the creative industry don't know the rate of pay for artists. But the Arts Union rate of pay website is such a great tool to kind of use as a reference. I'm a big advocate for making sure freelance artists and early career artists do know their rights and their rate of pay. I guess the government and local governments, like, you know, your local council, they need to really understand the need for creative work. If you want a project to go ahead and you also want freelancers or artists to be paid correctly, maybe not putting too many ideas into one funding bid. Less is more, I guess. That ensures that artists get paid properly and fairly. It's not overwhelming for artists or producers or whoever is taking part in the project. I also feel like things that need to change is within institutions. So when artists are leaving an educational institution, that they are given the information, proper information about how to set themselves up as artists when they leave university, what the rate of pay is, kind of, you know, the professional kind of tools and skills that they'll need to become a freelancer after they leave. Because I feel like there are people that leave university, they may be young and they may be anxious about starting as a freelancer, and then that will kind of get them to maybe go into a different, you know, career altogether, or they might find difficulties finding a job because they need a permanent job. But freelancing is such a great thing, kind of starting it up. But if they're given the right information, tools and skills in institutions, maybe that can change, and we can see a lot. We'll be able to see a diverse range of people that are creative or artist freelance.
So if you want to get in touch and send us a bit of audio about your experiences or a story or what you think needs to change in the arts sector for freelancers, you can email us vandalfactorytheatre@gmail.com. So it's time for another interview. We chatted to Clara and Flora, who are part of Musica por la Ciencia, which translates as Music for Science. They are both originally from Argentina. They talk how they collaborated with scientists, as well as the struggles they faced with the new hard right government taking power in Argentina.
My name is Florencia. A lot of people call me Flora here in the UK. And together with Clara, we have collaborated for many years since high school. And I have veered more into the education and technology part of it during the last years as well, since 2020, like you guys. We started with a new project together called Music for Science, trying to create conversations and especially audiovisual productions related to putting people from different disciplines together into sharing what they do. And also we wanted to kind of start exploring new ways of creating collaborative works and helping communities as well to interact.
Okay, I'm Clara. We come from Argentina, from Córdoba. So when we started with this project, Music for Science, it was like the possibility of bringing together all these points of view to know the creative process of the scientist world. I hadn't curiosity about the scientist world until the pandemic. And in the pandemic, what made me curiosity was the creative process of the scientists, how the scientists were changing and transforming their tools, you know, to bring them to this new context, to bring solutions. And somehow we were doing the same thing with the music. I was singing songwriter, and suddenly I discovered the potential of music, making dialogues and bridges between this creative process. So yes, we started with this project in a very friendly and amateur way. And the last season we recorded it in between Paris and Barcelona. And it was very interesting because at the beginning we started with trying to understand what was the COVID, what was a virus, what was a vaccine, what was an antibody. How do you say? Anticuerpo?
Yeah, antibody.
But now after the seasons, we understood that speaking about mental health was the consequence of this journey. So our last season, it's about mental health and the consensual of reality, because it's really interesting to understand what is actually reality, what is the structures that we have understood as reality, because they all are changing after this time. So yes, we are working in this process now.
What, when you say that the last season, what does that practically look like? What are you doing right now? And I'd love to know more about what are the conversations that you're having about mental health and people's relationship with reality, because I know mine's pretty bad.
Well, we talk about seasons because we always struggled with the format. We were just making songs, and then we had never had experience in TV, or we were mainly doing things for social media. So that has been shifting. We also did a podcast in the middle. So we've been trying out different formats, but we call them seasons because it's easier for us. So the first one, it was more like inviting musicians and artists to make songs to play in the laboratories for the scientists. Then we invited musicians into the lab. That was the second one. Then we invited scientists into the music studio. So we've been trying different formats. Then we did, when all of the restrictions were released, we actually made concerts where Clara would play songs and we would invite a scientist. So it was very strange for the audience to have also starting to break all of these stereotypes about the disciplines and the arts and the science. It is also, it feels like there are many effects from the pandemic related to mental health. But also last year was particularly a very stressful year for Argentina. And although we've been recording in Argentina and outside in abroad, I think we are a very stressed society. Anyways, and that's something that really compels us. And we come from there. We need to speak these things and try to work them out, at least through art, which is what we do.
Any music, Clara, any of your pieces or any music that's come out of the project or anything that's inspired, what would you like us to play on the podcast?
I would play Mapa Tesoro. It's one of the songs that we made in the first season. It's a very beautiful song from a singer-songwriter from Uruguay called Nico Ibarburu. And it's a very beautiful song. So I would choose this one.
Aprendí a escuchar la canción del viento por necesidad, como respirar, y lo que escuché se volvió velero para navegar entre tormentas de la oscuridad. Hay que perdonar, y es por uno mismo, no hay por qué cargar penas de alguien más, y lo que solté se volvió más mío. No podemos enjaular lo que está destinado a volar. Por eso te quiero aquí, fluyendo cerca de mí. Por eso te fui a buscar del otro lado del mar. Fue para reconstruir todo lo que no se ve, se siente al latir con toda la inmensidad.
tanta gente y te oí reír, ebria de ilusión, y lo que soñé se volvió camino que se unió en el trino cristalino de un mismo cantar. Supe naufragar construyendo un barco, aprendí a rezar perdido en el mar, y el mapa que encontré se volvió tesoro, se fundió en el oro de los ojos que te vieron crecer. Por eso te quiero aquí, fluyendo cerca de mí. Por eso te fui a buscar del otro lado del mar. Fue para reconstruir todo lo que no se ve, pero se siente a latir con toda la inmensidad. Por eso te quiero aquí, fluyendo cerca de mí. Por eso te fui a buscar del otro lado del mar. Fue para reconstruir todo lo que no se ve, pero se siente a latir con toda la inmensidad.
For anyone listening who might not know why it's been particularly stressful in Argentina in the last year, can you give us a little bit of an insight as to what's going on?
Okay, that's a very good question. That's the question from the moment. Argentina, as Latin America, but especially Argentina, has a very particular political and, yes, like a society process, you know. I had a friend in France that he works with mental health, especially with people who hear voices, schizophrenia. And they have a movement that tries to bring a context for those people to integrate all those voices and to listen to them and to deal with all these voices and help each other to integrate all the diversity that you have. And for my friend, it was a good idea to invite me to speak about the process of making music, because it's really similar, you know, when you are composing, you are in all this world with a lot of music, a huge chaos, that you have to bring it to order. And this process to bring it to the material world, it's something very healing, that brings you the possibility to be here, to understand what's happening in this chaos. When you can't integrate the diversity, you start to struggle with the voices that you don't want to hear, and you start to try to eliminate them, you know? Yeah. So the thing is that I think what's happening in Argentina, it has a lot of point of view, but if you want to really understand the process as human beings and in the context of the world, what is happening now, it's like a psychosis thing, that where all the people is not listening to themselves, and they are not listening to the others, and all the diversity is trying to be destroyed. If we don't learn to integrate all the diversity that we have inside, using the mirror that the reality is actually to bring you this lesson, and we're going to disappear, basically. And what's happening in Argentina, the whole system, it's disappearing, you know, all the structures that we knew. We have to develop new ways of thinking about health, thinking about education, thinking about art, thinking about science. All those systems are disappearing right now. You know, they are not supported from the state anymore. From in just 2 months, it disappeared. So we are, as Argentinian, we are part of this process. And even though we are not there, we are watching at this movie as as if it were science fiction, you know.
We were a bit on denial. I came at least here back to the UK in August. You came in October before the elections, and we never expected this to happen. We were one of those inside our progressive bubble, let's say, because we have to be honest, sometimes you end up in this echo chamber, and it is a real thing with all of our artist friends, and well, this is not going to happen in Argentina, we're not going to get the far right, and when it happens, it's just something that sweeps everything. And we have to also mention in all of this chaos and all of these voices having us a project which is about communication, it makes us wonder, like, what can we say? Because we don't want to keep on bombarding. We don't want to be part of this chaos. We just want to contribute something. So it's like we have to use our energy really to keep on doing new things and trying to rethink what's going on instead of just, I don't know, we are really at the point of choosing our battles at the moment.
Understanding that we are actually going through a process of transformation from the whole way to perceive the reality that we have had. At the same time, all what is happening with AI and with the over information that we are having makes us wonder what kind of content we have to or we want to develop, we want to share. And naturally, it's the context of our journey that we have made.
I think, like so much, when we talk about whether it's the simple case of funding, but it's about resources, it's about what you want from society, what you want from your communities. And I think so often it's so competitive that as artists, we want to hold on to the music venues, we want to hold on to the theatre spaces, and scientists are probably thinking we want to hold on to the laboratories and the research and the training. And yeah, it's so important that there is that dialogue between different forms of being creative, whether that's research and discovery of the sciences and or music.
Yes, the art, and then you have the industry of entertainment.
Mm.
Those are two very different things. And it's the same thing with the health, it's the same thing with the meals, it's the same thing with science. I think the real challenge is to understand that we have to develop new ways of creating the knowledge, of creating culture, of developing educational structures. The thing is that it's so hard because we have so many years of these structures of competitive ways.
So right from the beginning, we talking with scientists, we saw that, well, we shared the same problem about funding. That was besides sharing and also realizing that the worlds are much more connected. There are plenty of scientists that are artists, and there are many artists that do science in many ways. I mean, it's much more connected really than sometimes what we tend to separate. But the funding issue was something that right from the beginning, we realized it's a problem everywhere, not only funding research, but also funding communities and projects that try to work together with other types of really community and local situations. One of the truest dreams that we have with this project has always been to be able to create a system where we can fund our own project, but at the same time, always fund the communities and the people that we are working with. So we've always been very transparent or honest about talking about these things, because it can be a taboo as well within artists to talk about money. But we really think it's about the distribution. There is a lot of money. It's a lot of money out there. It's just, it's not well distributed. And that's what we want to always discuss about. And that's why we end up talking about politics, because in a way, what happened in Argentina is that all artists, educators, scientists, that we're all put on the same place of, no, we can't fund this because people are starving. It's an ideological thing in a way, in the end, and it's about the distribution of of those resources. And well, that's why like our end goal or end dream, we're working towards that, is to create a system that we can fund what we do, but at the same time, always think about those percentages and really impacting communities. And because yeah. the word that arts and cultures and scientists do have an impact.
If anyone listening wants to learn more about what you're doing or get in touch with you, maybe financially contribute, is there any, how can we learn more and keep in touch with what you're up to?
All our project is being made in Spanish, and this is really interesting because usually all the NFTs and the blockchain projects that we have made, they are in English. So for us, it's really important to bring this tool to the Spanish people, to the Spanish speaker community.
So we call the project Manuelita, which is a character of a children's song by a very famous singer-songwriter of children's music in Argentina. Manuelita is a turtle. So we use the image of the turtle as like the character that is inviting us to, especially inviting the community to join our journey. It's a turtle that goes from Argentina to Paris in the song story.
Exactly. So the website is manuelita.musicaporlaciencia.org.
Yeah, and Flora, you get a pick as well because you've there's two of you, so you get twice as many songs as other interviewees.
Okay, maybe I could choose Movimiento, okay. Which is about a movement and how that is part of us in this journey as well. It's a song by Jorge Drexler that Clara sings.
Apenas nos pusimos en dos pies, comenzamos a mirar por la sabana, buscando la manada de bisontes, más allá del horizonte, a nuevas tierras lejanas. Los niños a la espalda y expectantes, los ojos en alerta, todo oídos, olfateando aquel desconcertante paisaje nuevo, desconocido. Somos una especie en viaje. No tenemos pertenencia, sino equipaje. Vamos con el polen en el viento. Estamos vivos porque estamos en movimiento. Nunca estamos quietos, somos transhumantes. Somos padres, hijos, nietos y bisnietos de inmigrantes. Es más mío lo que sueño que lo que toco. Yo no soy de aquí, pero tú tampoco. Yo no soy de aquí, pero tú tampoco. De ningún lado del todo. Todos lados un poco. Pasamos desiertos, glaciares, continentes, el mundo entero de extremo a extremo, empecinados, supervivientes. El ojo en el viento y en las corrientes, la mano firme en el remo. Cargamos con nuestras guerras, nuestras canciones de cuna, nuestro rumbo hecho de versos, de migraciones, de hambruna. Y así ha sido desde siempre, desde el infinito. Fuimos la gota de agua viajando en el meteorito. Cruzamos galaxias, vacíos, milenios.
buscábamos oxígeno, encontramos sueños. Apenas nos pusimos en los pies y nos vimos a la sombra de la hoguera. Escuchamos la voz del desafío. Siempre miramos al río pensando en la otra ribera. Somos una especie en viaje. No tenemos pertenencia, sino equipaje. Vamos con el poder en el viento. Estamos vivos porque estamos en movimiento. Nunca estamos quietos, somos transhumantes. Somos padres, hijos, nietos y bisnietos de inmigrantes. Es más mío lo que sueño que lo que toco. Yo no soy de aquí, pero tú tampoco. Yo no soy de aquí, pero tú tampoco. De ningún lado del todo. De todos lados un poco. Lo mismo con las canciones, los pájaros, los alfabetos. Si quieres que algo se muera, déjalo quieto.
During that track, the accordion is quickly becoming one of my favourite instruments. It sounds so cool and can fit into so many different situations. So it's on that track, sounds awesome. Then the warm-up act for Grace Petrie was Amy Thatcher and Francesca Knowles. There was also an accordion in that, which sounded super cool. There was that young person in the summer, last summer, who could play the accordion.
Yeah,
we
Paul.
Put it into that protest scene, which just sounded great as well. Oh, but no, I can't. I wouldn't be able to do it with all the diddling and the diddling and the bopping
the
and the pushing
wheezing.
And the pulling. Oh. Ooh, no, no, I couldn't.
The old squeeze
I do,
box.
I couldn't do the recorder at school. Never mind the accordion.
Your ukulele's mainly just for sticking stickers.
Mostly
on.
For stickers, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I've run out of space, so I've put them on my laptop now.
Cool, stickers. Are spreading.
Yeah.
It's almost time to say goodbye, but we have some new news here at Vandal Factory HQ. We've been doing this coming up to 3 years now, this podcast. We've been a theatre company before that, and we love doing it, and it means a lot to us. But it is taking up more and more time, like a sort of snowball that's growing and growing as we make more connections and more people, and we want to talk about more things. We feel ambitious, we feel excited. But unfortunately, in order to hit those aims and targets, we've realised we do need a little bit of capital, a bit of cash in the old Vandal Factory bank accounts to pay for things like petrol, to pay for tickets, to pay for equipment, and a bit to our time to do these interviews, to record them, to edit them, and put them out into the world, and a bit of marketing alongside
and put up anywhere our mouth is in terms of supporting the artists that we want to talk to and champion their work as well. We'd love to commission some amazing bands to come up with some new jingles, for example.
That'd be amazing.
So, what's our point?
So, we have launched a Patreon.
Woo!
If you don't know, a Patreon is like a monthly subscription service. Now, don't worry. You can pay as little as a pound. Well, it's dollars. So like $1, $5. There's other tiers above that. You get little rewards. You get a little bit behind the scenes stuff with us. So you can search for Vandal Factory on Patreon. We can look on our social media. We'll do links to it. And if you want to support us and throw in a couple of quid a month, that would really help us. And there'll be some little bonus rewards out of that as well. So we're going to finish off. It's been a very folk themed show, to be fair. I had a lot of acoustic music, and we're going to finish with the troubadour himself, Joe Solo, who's been featured on previous episodes. Now, Joe has a new album out alongside Grace. Came out the same week. I was buzzing. I was like two folk punk political musicians banging in my ears. And we couldn't not play a Joe Solo song that's about hope, that also features Commoners Choir.
Yeah!
It's like the whole universe aligned. It was the song for this podcast. So Joe has very kindly done a little intro to the song, which is called Stupid Hope. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, folks. We love you very much. We've been Vandal Factory. Please like, share, subscribe, listen to previous episodes, and stay angry and stay hopeful.
Take care of yourself, folks.
Hiya there. I'm Joe Solo, and you're about to hear a song called Stupid Hope that I recorded with Commoners Choir from a brand new album, Sledgehammer Songs. It's ironically titled, of course. Hope is the sole reason that we make music, you know. It's the sound of hope, isn't it? You know, we're trying to inspire, we're trying to electrify you, we're trying to cook all your juices so that you switch back on and you're prepared to take the world and face it in a whole new light, you know. Music lifts you, that's what it should be for. If it's used for any other purpose, quite frankly, it's a waste of time. But at the current age that we're living through, I think it's more important than ever. We can very easily get sucked into the culture war, which is effectively a very negative experience, you know. It's the constant backwards and forwards, to-ing and fro-ing of messages of despair, you know. And as a musician, it's not your job to tap into that and sing about it and encourage it. It's your job to counter it, to fight it, to push it away, to make it as irrelevant as it actually is, to try and inspire people to do better, to do good in the world instead of forever creating negativity and badness. That's what feeds the despair that drives a lot of the right-wing drift that this country is going through at the moment. Hope is the only thing worth making music for. It's the only thing worth getting out of bed for. Without it, you're knackered. So the song's called Stupid Hope, but hope is anything but. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks.
Speak up from the heart, you know that you need hope. To smash it out the park, you know that you need hope. To see the fire and a spark, you know that you need hope. You need hope in troubled times. In the chaos and confusion now, well, you need hope. In these days of disillusion now, well, you need hope. To shout out, be blah, revolution now, well, you need hope. You need hope in troubled times. You need hope, stupid hope, stupid hope. You need hope, stupid hope. Come now, mother, you need hope. To do what must be done, you know that you need hope. To get the bastards on the run, you know that you need hope in troubled times. You need hope, stupid hope, stupid hope. You need hope, stupid hope. In this age of narcissism now, well, you need hope. To own a bad decision now, well, you need hope. Just to get someone to listen, sometimes you need hope. You need hope in troubled times. You need hope, stupid hope, stupid hope. Before us now, well, you need hope. Until they can't ignore us, yeah, well, you need hope. And just to join in with a chorus, sometimes you need hope in troubled times. To stand up here and sing a song in order,
you need hope.
to get a room to sing along in order.
You need hope.
And then I pass the message on in order. You need hope. You need hope in troubled times. You need hope, stupid hope, stupid hope. You need hope, stupid hope, stupid hope. You need hope, stupid hope, stupid hope. You need hope, stupid hope, stupid hope.